scrambles left, winds up right. He's got time at the 10 to the 5. Yes. To the end zone. Touchdown. Darren Sproles gone. Touchdown, Eagles.
This is the Root and Why Podcast, talking all things NFL. Now here's your hosts, Root and Why.
Yo, 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 welcome to part two of our chat with Josh Liskowitz. If you missed the previous episode, go back, listen to us recap the recent NFL news, and we covered the edge rushers with Josh Liskowitz, some of his favourites, Vic Beasley, Shane Ray, Marcus Golden, etc. And now this is our second half of our chat with Josh Liskowitz. We talk defensive backs such as Byron Jones, Trey Waynes, Marcus Peters, etc. And then after that, we've got Justin in for the Rumble, brand new segment.
That's going
to
be fun.
That's fun. And we also have Matthew Bungard in to discuss pizza's flavours. We did mention this segment last week, and this is the first. So we've got two new segments after our chat with Josh. A bit of a lighthearted banter and some fun after some serious draft discussion with Josh Liskowitz.
Yeah, there's going to be maybe some new flavors as well. Some flavors you don't know about, or some flavors that you might wholeheartedly disagree that you use.
And an appearance from Craig David, the hugely successful 2000s R&B artist.
Yes.
And we love him. We love him. In case you're wondering about Josh, as we mentioned in the previous episode, he's a college scout for JM Junior Scouting since 2009, and he is attending the Chicago NFL draft in a couple of weeks. You can follow him on Twitter at Josh Liskowitz. He's very active on Twitter, and he partakes in a Twitter mock draft a few times a week with Brian Perez of Draft Breakdown. So this is our segment where we speak defensive backs. Enjoy. All right, we'll move to the cornerbacks now. You mentioned Jalen Collins. I've seen him in a lot of mock drafts going surprisingly early, which I guess is similar to Bud Dupree, where it's just all potential. The traits are there, the speed is there. What round grade did you have on him?
I had a top of the third round grade on him, and I fully expect him to go higher. When I watch him, I see some of the same traits I saw with Darius Slay when he came out 2 years at Mississippi State. You see the length, the athleticism, the ability to flip his hips, chase downfield. He has the long speed you look for. But with the ball in the air, he just doesn't show the instincts. There's far too many times on film where he's in position to make a play on the ball and his receiver still comes down with it. We saw some of that with Darius Slay, and he had a horrible rookie year for Detroit. They had to bench him despite it being a position of need at that time. He was also terrible against the run, which Jalen Collins I thought was at LSU as well. But then all of a sudden this past year the light clicked on for Darius Slay, and immediately he's shadowing Jordy Nelson all over the field, and he did this basically every game for Detroit. Turned into really looks like he's going to be one of the premier guys. So I think that's your hope with Jalen Collins, is that it just takes him a year or two to realize his physical potential, and then the light goes on mentally, and at that point the sky could be the limit with him.
Hmm. What's your opinion on Byron Jones?
I'm a huge fan of Byron Jones. He's my number two ranked corner.
Wow.
I think he's my number five or six overall player in this entire draft. I really, really like him. I don't think he's just a flash in the pan from the combine, obviously, I like him.
I was going to ask about that. Did your opinion on him go up after the combine?
I had never looked at him before the combine. The only time I'd ever heard his name was the year before when he was catching interceptions against my Michigan Wolverines. But he blew up the combine, so I went back to look at his film, and I think everything you saw there is evident on his film. He really improved from 2013 to 2014, which is one of the things that gets me really excited about him. You look at 2013, he's a bit choppy in his pedal. He looks a little stiff in the hips, a little bit slow to transition and break forward. Just didn't look real sure of himself. Then all of a sudden, this past year, until he had the shoulder injury, which kept him out half the year and is probably a big part of why he was so under the radar, just because he only played half his senior year. it's just, again, you know, you talk about the light going on, and I think that's what you see with Byron Jones this past year. He's so low and so disciplined in his pedal, and he's such a superior athlete that he can maintain it in and out of his brakes much longer than your typical corner, despite him being over 6 foot and about 200 pounds, which is excellent size for the position as well. He can jam and press at the line of scrimmage. He does a good job of understanding which shoulder to press on the wide receiver. He can run downfield, obviously. I think he was in the 4.35 to 4.44 range when he ran at his pro day. He actually didn't run a 40 at the combine. But I think all that shows up on film. He's a tough guy at the point of attack against blockers. He really does a good job of using his hands to shed and locate the ball. He really needs to work on his tackling. That's an issue I have. That's the single reason why I rank Kevin Johnson above him. But I'm a big fan of Byron Jones, and I hope he goes high because he should. He's a really, really good football player. His best days are ahead of him.
Yeah. So you said Byron Jones is your number two corner, and then you just said he was your number five player overall, was it?
At five or six, yeah. I was trying to go back through the other day, and he's way up there. I actually only have... I have 11 first-round grades this year, and two of them have large asterisks. One injury, that's Todd Gurley. The other off the field, that's Dorial Green Beckham, the wide receiver from Missouri or Oklahoma, depending on what which way you want to go with that.
Yeah,
so I really only have 9 first-round grades this year, so it's not a very top-heavy class. No. So
you had Kevin Johnson ahead of Byron Jones then, from what I can interpret from that. So Trey Waynes is not your number one corner?
No, he's my number three, but that being said, he's still in that mix as well. I have all three as first-round grades.
Okay, cool.
So as far as at the top of the draft, that's a very deep position for me. I think if you're getting any one of those three guys, you're getting a very good football player that's going to be able to contribute immediately, which isn't something that should be said lightly, because corner is a position that typically takes a while to translate.
Yeah.
But I think all three of those guys are ready to play at the NFL level.
Hmm. So you see all three definitely going in the first round?
Yes, I can't imagine them not.
Yeah, okay. So maybe we've seen mocks where Byron Jones is started to creep up over the last few weeks. Maybe he could creep up into the top 20?
I would be surprised if... I think the absolute farthest he could go, the latest he could go would be 22 to Pittsburgh.
Wow, okay.
Yeah,
I think the only reason he wouldn't is if a team falls in love with, like, an Eric Rowe who could play corner or safety.
Yeah.
Maybe they gamble too much on Jalen Collins. I think, but when all said and done, I think all five of those guys are going to go first round.
Okay.
And the three, Waynes, Johnson, and Jones, are all very, very deserving. I do like Rowe too, but the other three are superior players.
Okay, so there is the top tier of corners. We're going to ask you about Marcus Peters. He's I guess, another guy with a sort of an asterisk next to his name. What's your thoughts on him, you know, on the field firstly, and then obviously the off-field concerns after that?
Sure. I spent a weekend a couple weeks ago really hammering out all the corners so I could see them all back to back to back to back. And I was actually quite disappointed with Peters. I didn't think he was as physical, as aggressive as he needed to be. I mean, you see the athleticism, that's fine, but to me, the number one thing that translates with guys year after year is the ability to play press and play physical at the point of attack at the line of scrimmage. We saw that 2 years ago with Xavier Rhodes, who's already a stud for Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that last year with one of my absolute favorite players last year. I had a top 10 grade on, didn't go to the fourth round, but Bashaud Breeland had a fantastic year for the Redskins. The ability to play press, that translates, and I just didn't see that all the time with Peters. And then you throw on top, it's one thing if you have a marijuana problem like Randy Gregory does. It's another thing if you simply can't control your emotions, because that could spill on the field, and then that compromises everybody around you during the play. And I think we saw that with Peters. I was watching him with a buddy of mine. We watched him together, and it was clear the Colorado game, we both turned to each other after about the third quarter, and he had literally just given up. He just stopped playing, essentially, the second half. And we said, I bet you that that's his last game. That's probably the game that got him booted. And sure enough, we looked up, and that was the last game he played. I mean, it was obvious that whatever was going on in his head was affecting his play on the field. And I just think that's so dangerous. We saw that in Detroit a couple years ago with Titus Young, just running the wrong routes on purpose, just completely compromising the integrity of his team's offense. So, again, when you have a kid with a drug issue, that's one thing. But if it's affecting his on-field play when he's on the field, that's a whole nother story. I would stay clear of him.
Mm. Okay.
Here's another name that it's a little bit easier. Ifo Ekpre-Olomu, out of Oregon. Last year he was being touted as possibly, you know, the top corner in the draft, and since then he's dropped down huge numbers. What do you think about him?
Yeah, and I was certainly one of the people that you would have found hyping him like that. I thought his 2013 tape was fantastic. Doesn't quite have the size you're looking for. He's under 5'10", under 200. But you look at him athletically, he can do everything you want. He plays a lot bigger, or at least he did in 2013. He played a lot bigger than his actual size. He was physical, just very, very instinctual with the ball in the air and running and chasing. In particular, you put on the 2013 game against Oregon State and just watch him go to work against and my memory is completely gone. The little wide receiver that went to Brandon Cooks, who New Orleans took in the first round. He just chewed him up and spit him out all game. Just Cooks had absolutely nothing on him. Cooks that game reminded me of Cordero Patterson and his struggles in a sense that he'd get jammed, and he didn't have a response to it. He couldn't get separation, and he'd just eventually give up. That's the kind of game Brandon Cooks had against Ifo. And then you go to this year, and he's getting exposed by bigger guys. His size was an issue. It just wasn't a very impressive year, and then, of course, he tore the ACL. Still, that being said, I think he's a guy you still have to seriously consider taking – late in the third, fourth round range, just because even if he is a slot corner, probably 60-70% of NFL teams, that's their base defense, is the nickel defense with that third corner playing the slot.
Yeah.
So that guy's still a starter, even if that's the only position he can play. That's a very valuable player. I mean, we see Brandon Boykin in Philadelphia make play after play after play when really all he is a nickel corner. That's the only position he plays. But I guess the bad 14 is a little scary. The knee injury is a little scarier, but I still think he's a very good player. Last year, Bradley Roby had a similar track. Great 2012, really got exposed at times in 2013, still went first round to Denver. Obviously, he didn't have the knee injury, but he had a really good year for the Broncos. So I still have high hopes for Ifo. I just don't think he's a guy, because of the knee injury, you can really gamble on with too high of a pick this year.
No, that's understandable. I mean, from watching him, he showed all the athletic ability, especially with that diving interception, if you remember seeing that.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Just this last season, but just seems to lack the size compared to the other corners.
Yep, yeah, and that's one of the unique things about this class is he's really the only munchkin of that group. All these guys are 5'11 and a half or larger. They're close to 200 pounds. That's one of the more impressive things about this class is that, yes, you have all these great athletes, but they're all tall, long kids, and that's such a tough thing for the position, and that's clearly the way the NFL is going. We've seen a bunch of corners the last couple of years been probably overdrafted just because of their size. So for once, we have those tall guys that are actually very good athletes too.
That Seattle mold creeping in, getting those
exactly
corners. And on Ifo, I think the chances of Chip Kelly picking up an Oregon product might make him a little bit higher grade, maybe. Chip loves his Oregon players.
I would generally say that could happen, except for Boykin being there. But yeah. I will say this. I think it's pretty obvious that Boykin's not happy. I think there are going to be a couple of draft day trades with some of these players that might be a little disgruntled. And certainly, Philly's got a couple of them. For whatever reason, they seem to want to fire sale some of their better players this year. And that could certainly end up being what happens there. They could end up trying to give value for Boykin in return, and then take Ifo maybe with the fourth round pick.
Yeah, I could see that happening, especially with rumors coming out that the Miami Dolphins are interested in one of the Eagles' defensive backs. That's the rumor circulating at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, FSU's cornerbacks, DUI aside, who do you prefer, P.J. Williams or Ronald Darby?
It's really a shame P.J. Did what he did, because I'm a really big fan of him. I have a top of the second round grade on him. Not quite the athlete of the other guys, but a real instinctive, smart player, real physical player at the point of attack. I think he could play corner or safety. Now you got the issue that he's in the program for he's going to be in there for the substance abuse. So one more strike and you're looking at possible suspension for him. So that's got to be a worry. And when you combine that with him not being quite at the same level athletically, I think he's going to drop quite a bit. So he's another guy where third, fourth round, despite his off-field struggles, you might want to take a gamble on him just because I think he's a really good football player. I think Ronald Darby is the absolute opposite. You see him on film. You see, obviously, he's very athletic. He ran a fast 40. He can run with guys in space. He's fairly physical in press coverage. That's all fine. You put him off the ball at all, whether it's off coverage or zone, and he is completely lost. One of the least instinctual players I've seen in this class, and that's really worrisome considering he's been a 3-year starter at Florida State. Yeah. But I've heard stories, there have been times where PJ would go to the sidelines and go to the DB coach and say, look, I don't understand why we're giving him these zone looks. Just put him at the line of scrimmage because they know he can't handle it when he's off the ball. He can't make those kind of quick decisions, and they're picking on him. So when his own teammates are saying those kinds of things, that's really worrisome to me. We see it every year again. You see the top athletes at corner. They're going to get drafted high, and someone's going to overdraft with him, and I think it's going to be a mistake.
I agree. I watched the tape, and I preferred Williams to Darby. I couldn't believe that some actually have Darby ahead of Williams, and that was pre-DUI. I didn't see that at all. Speaking of sort of athletes, a guy like Robertson Daniel from BYU, like his pro day was like incredible numbers, 4.35. How important is, you know, speed and things like that? Does that push someone's draft stock up? We haven't seen tape on him, so it's purely looking at scouting reports and things like that. But, you know, 4.35 for a corner is incredibly quick.
Yeah, for a corner and wide receiver especially, and safety for that matter as well, yeah, that 40 time is huge. And it makes some sense because that's the one position where there's a better chance you're actually going to be running 40 yards straight. So that stuff does matter, but in the end, I want football players. I want to see a guy that has instincts, that has physicality, that competes at the point of attack. And I think that kind of thing plays out. Going back to Bashaud Breeland, I think he was high 4.5s at his pro day, 4.6 at the combine, so not a super fast guy. But and even Richard Sherman ran in the 4.6s at the combine. But you see those guys are so physical, so smart, that they're able to do so many more things than guys like Ronald Darby that just run and chase.
That's interesting. One last question on a cornerback. I've seen Quentin Rowland sort of rise up a few draft boards in sneak. So I've seen him in the first round of a mock at some point, but normally early second. What's your thoughts on him as a player? I haven't seen too much tape, but we're limited on what we can watch. We rely heavily on Draft Breakdown and
yep.
Fantastic website that is. What's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, actually, in our podcast, we talked about him last week. He's actually our number one ranked safety.
Ah.
And I think that's where the safety class is headed. You're looking at converting guys that play corner, Eric Rowe would be another one. Personally, I prefer Eric Rowe as a safety over Quentin Rollins. The size is part of it. I think Rowe's probably a better athlete, too. But Rollins is the type of guy you want working off the ball. He's got range. He's got intelligence. He's tough. He can hit, but he can play the ball in the air as well. But he doesn't quite have the athleticism you're looking for at the corner position. So I really like him as a safety and as a day two pick. I think that's a reasonable play for him.
Another question from a listener, Charles Camino. Which cornerback prospect most compares to Richard Sherman in terms of their physical traits?
Yeah, I would go Byron Jones, just because you've got the full size. He's heavier than Kevin Johnson. Kevin Johnson has the competes and the height, but Byron Jones is just a full package. And actually, he's a better athlete than Richard Sherman, too. But if that's the mold you're looking for, I think Byron Jones is that guy.
Cool. That sort of wraps up our cornerback talk. But as we asked you with the edge rushers, any sleepers or favorite players? Oh, you've already mentioned, you know, Byron Jones and Kevin Johnson and Waynes. Is there any other players that sort of going unnoticed that you recommend people having a look at?
Yeah, one in particular, another Clemson guy, I like Breland so much last year, but Gary Peters is an intriguing guy to me. Not a top-end athlete, and I think that's why no one's really talking about him, but he's just a really smart, heady player, always in the right position. He's got size and length you want. He can play off the ball, he can break in close, he can play physical at the line of scrimmage, he's tough enough to do that. Not a guy you want running in space with guys 40 yards downfield, but still, if you can find ways to allow him to keep everything in front of him, I think he can be a very productive player just because he's so intelligent.
Okay, so we'll keep an eye on Gary Peters.
Yeah.
Some value.
Do you find that it's better for a player to be you know, kind of dual position threat, or is it better for them just to be focused kind of on the one position more? Do you see that as being valuable that they can play two positions, or it's better that, you know, they've only played the one position their entire college career?
I think versatility is huge. I think that's very important because every team you're going to go against is going to have very, very different looks based on the personnel they have. And I think it's comforting when you can take a guy like an Eric Rowe toward the end of the first round and say, okay, we'll try him at corner. If he doesn't work there, then that's fine. We know we've got a good safety because he's played there before. He showed he could handle it. He's got the physical makeup, the mentality, and the intelligence to do it. I think that's a huge bonus.
Cool. Before we wrap it up, we've got a few more listener questions to ask. These are just generic questions about no specific sort of position group. At Ben J. Boyo said, is an offensive tackle in the first round a good move for the Carolina Panthers?
I think it is the only move for them. Where they're picking, I think it's a sweet spot. I think they're going to find a very good player there. Whether it's someone like Eric Flowers that falls to them, he'd be an absolute no-brainer. TJ Clemmings from Pittsburgh, I think he's a guy that translates to either tackle position. And even as a rookie, if you're concerned about him playing on the edge, you can slide him inside the guard. DJ Humphreys from Florida, he's a guy that's been what I guess you would call a late riser. I'm a really big fan of him. Andrus Pete, maybe he's the guy that gets pushed down a little bit. That being said, you look at what Carolina has, and I don't think you necessarily want either Michael Oher or the other kid they just picked up from San Francisco. I don't think you want those guys as your left tackle.
Jonathan Martin.
Jonathan Martin. Yeah, I think the last couple years have shown that those guys are just, they're not left tackles. So they need to be finding a guy like that. Jake Fisher would be another guy. It'd be a very good pickup there. Maybe a second round sleeper I like a lot is Darrell Williams out of Oklahoma. Probably more of a right tackle, but I think he was more productive than the other kid from Oklahoma, just a really steady kid. And then you also have the Wisconsin kid, Rob Havenstein, not a pretty athlete, but he's just so technically sound, uses his length and his stride to his advantage, and he's just consistently in good position. He's going to be a starting right tackle in the league for a long, long time. So I think there's going to be value there in the end of the first round into the second at the offensive tackle position.
Yeah, and Lance Zierlein from NFL.com mentioned that Cedric Ogbuehi, he was considered a – I'm terrible with these names. Not an English major at all. From Texas A&M, he was considered a first-round prospect and then obviously had the injury, but he's still convinced that Cedric will go in the first round.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a reach for him. I had, I think I had a late second round grade on him before the injury. So I do like him, but I worry about his propensity to kind of get off balance, to bend at his waist instead of his knees and kind of lose contact that way. That's generally a red flag to me that gets offensive tackles at the NFL level into trouble just because you're facing those speed guys that can do multiple moves. And so if you have you're a guy that can't change directions well, that's always off balance, you're going to have problems there. So with Ogbuehi, I'd be a little more reserved on, especially considering we've got a knee injury factoring too. But yeah, I've heard similar to Lance that he's probably going to end up sneaking somewhere in the late first round.
A question from at Brian Smoke: who would be a great sleeper in the rounds after round four, and why he isn't in the first three rounds?
Sure, I've got a couple I'll go through. One, this is a unique thing because typically every player that goes to the Senior Bowl gets a combine invite, but there are a couple this year that did not. One was the guard from Georgia Tech, Shaq Mason. I watch him on film, and I have no idea why he didn't get a combine invite. I guess it's because they didn't pass there. Whoever organized was worried that, because of his lack of experience and pass protection that he'd have problems and people don't think of him as highly. But I just see a really competitive, smart, physically dominant player at guard. And it could even be one of those situations where you have NFL teams that know he's flying a little bit under the radar, so they're keeping quiet on him. Maybe they know they like him, not too worried about seeing him at combine, and they want to kind of keep it hush-hush with him. Another player I'm hearing similar hype on that just continues to build is the quarterback from Colorado State Pueblo, Chris Bonner. I keep hearing that NFL teams think he's the next Joe Flacco, and I absolutely loved him on film. He's actually my number two rated quarterback behind only Mariota. I have a third round grade on him. When I watch him on film, he might play at a small school, but I think we see some next level mental traits with him. We see the ability for him to go through his progressions. We see how he makes post-snap snap judgments. There's a couple of plays, if you go to draft breakdown, it's great because you actually have all 22 film on him, so you have a wide-angle coach's copy. Hmm. There's a play in the Sam Houston game, which, by the way, Sam Houston's actually a step-up of competition for Colorado State Pueblo, where he's rolling out to his right at about the 40 or 35, and his man is covered like a blanket crossing to the back of the end zone. So what does he do? He throws it 5 yards behind him, and his receiver sees it, stops, ends up getting a back shoulder touchdown. Just mental adjustments like that that people like Mariota and Winston just aren't doing. So I think Bonner is a guy that, despite not having a combine invite, despite a lot of the major media not even knowing his name, I could see him going very early day three, and I'm even starting to hear rumors that someone might, just to make sure they get him, jump on him late day two.
Wow.
Yeah, that, where do you have Jameis Winston? That's very interesting.
Yeah, I figured that would pique your interest. Yeah. I have a fourth round grade on him.
Wow, why are you so low on him?
Yeah, and I want to preface this by, this is based off film. Okay. I see a lot of nice traits on him. He has a good, not great arm. I don't think it's all world like it's being made out to be. He's not Jay Cutler with his arm, but he is Jay Cutler with his decision making. I don't think I've ever seen him identify and go to a hot read. He's terrible against zone coverage. He just refuses to read it. He the way he throws, he plays with an arrogance similar to Jay Cutler, in that he just thinks that he has the physical capability to fit the ball into every tight area. He doesn't care what the coverage is. And quite frankly, he's going to end up with 20-plus interceptions every year if he does it at the NFL level. And then you put on top of it the off-field, the character stuff, the clear lack of maturity. Maybe the light goes on there, but I have a hard time buying into it. I think he's a huge, huge risk at the top of the draft. And I just don't think he's the type of elite prospect in terms of arm size or arm strength or athleticism like Cam Newton was to warrant that high a pick.
Hmm. Oh, that's a very valuable insight.
We're talking quarterbacks before we get back to finishing that question. Where would someone, excuse me if I get the name wrong, Cardale Jones, who played for Ohio State, where would you have ranked him if he entered the draft? Because there was a lot of conjecture over him with such little game tape, but when he was on the field, he was, you know, really exciting to watch.
Yeah, that was certainly an interesting situation. Personally, I haven't charted all the three games of his that he played. I didn't break everything down, but I think he probably made a mistake. This is a very, very weak class. I mean, I just talked about how Mariota was my first quarterback and Bonner was my second. I have a second-round grade on Mariota and a third on Bonner. So that tells you what this class is overall. It's just not an impressive class. I think he would have probably been the number three quarterback off the board, whether that would have been the first round or second round, I'm not sure. But with him, you see enough athleticism to be able to make plays with his feet, but more importantly, the arm strength, the anticipation, the ability to make every throw on the field. I do worry a little bit about his maturity. He was known to spout off and say some interesting things on Twitter. I think at one point he said he went to Ohio State to play football and not school.
Yeah, I saw that.
So things like that you have to kind of worry about, especially at the quarterback position, because it's one thing if your fullback's a bit of a meathead. It's a completely different story when your quarterback is.
Yeah.
But all that being said, yes, I think he made a mistake because he could have been a very high pick.
Yeah. So we'll finish off that question from Brian. You mentioned Shaq Mason, Chris Bonner. You said you had a couple more.
Yeah. One of my favorite players in this class, another guy that didn't get a combine invite. He's had some injury issues, kind of overshadowed by his teammates at Missouri, and that's wide receiver Jimmy Hunt. I think he was just under 6'1", 200 pounds, so he's got the size you want. When he got healthy for his pro day, he ran very well. He ran sub 4.5. Has some issues with his hands, and I think that's probably above everything else what probably turned some people off to him. Not real natural hands. I almost wonder if maybe he needs to get his eyes checked, maybe get a new prescription, and that he would be far from the first player to have that. But you look at everything else he does. He's a very competitive, very sound blocker. And right off the bat, when you have that, you know he could play special teams. So while you're teaching him the game, you don't have to be burning a roster spot with an inactive player because he can play on specials. So he can do that. He's got enough athleticism to get vertical. He can play the ball in the air competitively. I think he shows a full skill set that's worth developing and the competitiveness and intelligence to really develop for the next level. I think he's a player that's going to be a significantly better pro than he was in college as long as he can stay healthy and on the field.
Hmm. Josh, you've got us all interested. You said that this year you've got only 11?
I think it was 9.
Oh, sorry, yeah, with asterisks, that's right. 9 first-round grades. Would you mind telling us who your first-round grade is?
Sure.
In order?
Yeah, I can run through that.
Yeah.
Beasley will be my number one overall player. Leonard Williams is number two. Number three is Louisville's wide receiver, Devontae Parker. And then you got the corners that we talked about, Kevin Johnson and Byron Jones. I love Brandon Scherff, the offensive tackle/guard from Iowa. I talked about with the Utah corner. You know, he's a guy that you try him at corner. If he doesn't work there, you play him at safety. You got a starting safety. Well, that's kind of the same thing with Brandon Scherff. You want to start him off at offensive tackle. Excuse me. But if he doesn't work out there, you've got probably an all-pro guard.
Does your tape with him from Maryland concern you? He got torched 3 or 4 times in that game.
The game against Maryland?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are some clear issues with him. I think he's a bit stiff in the hips, not particularly efficient in terms of changing directions, but he's so quick and efficient off the snap that he can still get the edge, and he's such a physical player. Typical, when you look at the typical Iowa offensive line prospect, they're not real physical guys. They actually don't teach their linemen to punch. That was an issue that Riley Reiff had coming out. And it has kind of spilled over to the NFL, not so much in the run game, but in pass protection. He just lets guys get on top of him because he doesn't have that aggressive first punch. But you see that with Brandon Scherff. He's a guy that wants to maul, wants to compete, wants to finish every single play. And that, above all, really translates to the NFL. We saw Jake Long until injuries derailed his career. He made a career out of that because he was never a great athlete. He was always an average athlete. But he's such a competitive player that he's a guy you could trust to put at left tackle and be a very consistent performer.
Yeah, okay. It's interesting.
Yeah,
I'm not, I prefer Lael Collins and Scherff, but I understand if you play him at guard, and you know he's going to be a guard that is in the league for a very long time. So he is number 7 on your board? 6?
Yeah, I think that would be 6 or 7,
yep.
And then Kevin White,
mm-hmm.
West Virginia wide receiver. He's a good player too. Not as twitchy as Devontae Parker, which sounds funny because he ran the 4.35 at the combine. But I think when you watch him on film, he doesn't play like that fast. And I think it was clear in his combine workout. They don't do NFL Network does a terrible job of showing the on-field workouts. I've been fortunate enough the last couple of years to actually get to see them on the field. And he's just not playing at that same speed in and out of his breaks. Not a guy that I think is going to get consistent separation. Can he consistently win the jump ball? Absolutely. If you put him in the slot, I mean, he's going to be dangerous because guys aren't going to be able to necessarily press him if you're moving him around. I think he could be a very, very good player, but I don't think he has quite the full skill set Devontae Parker does.
Hmm.
And then beyond that, what am I at? I have one more to go.
I think so.
Oh, Eric Flowers. Eric Flowers would be my last one. I'm a real big fan of him. He's a kid who's only 20, so while it may look ugly at times when he's protecting the edge, that's something to keep in mind is that, again, you have a kid that clearly is a good athlete, even though he has bad technique on the edge. But he's a real competitive kid, has the size you want for the position. And I think he can be an absolutely dominant run blocker. So he's a player I would feel very comfortable drafting, putting at right tackle the first couple of years to start with, and then kicking him over to left tackle if need be.
Hmm.
Wow, cool. No QBs in the...
No QBs.
No, but Mariota in the right hands, I have no problems taking him in the top 10. I mean, and that's the thing, though, is that when you have only 9 first-round grades, inevitably that means you've got second-round guys that you are going to be okay with taking top 10 just because you got to take somebody there.
Absolutely. So if we were to put
Mariota in Tampa, per se, with Lovie Smith, I think it'd be an absolute disaster. But you put him at the Jets with Chan Gailey as that offensive coordinator, I think it'd be fantastic because Chan Gailey has a history of taking the guys he has and constructing his offense around them, not trying to pigeonhole them into his offense. So I think if he were to go to the Jets, that would be an absolute home run pick for them.
Yeah. All right. So now that we have your top 9, just out of interest, who was your number 1 player last year? Is it Clown?
I think it was Khalil Mack.
It definitely wasn't
Clowney. Clowney was number 6 or 7.
Okay.
But I was actually, you know what? No, it wasn't Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack was my number 1 defensive player. Jake Matthews was my number 1 player overall, and he's the best tackle I've ever evaluated at the college level. He certainly had his struggles this year, but I think he was also put in a difficult situation because that line in Atlanta was just an absolute disaster. And he was thrust into left tackle because of injury early on. He didn't have a guard to support him. I still think he's going to be a lockdown, shutdown tackle for a long, long time in the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Kyle Shanahan there was going to help him a lot.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. Any other questions before we wrap it up?
No, that was great.
That was awesome. A lot of content. I really appreciate you coming on, Josh. Anything you want to plug before we let you go?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Josh Liskowitz. I'll spell that out. That's at JOSHLISKIEWITZ. Keep an eye on 120sports.com. We'll be doing our own draft show online. So not sure if you'll see me on there. You'll definitely see Russ Landy, who I work for, an ex-NFL scout. He's a scout with the Montreal Alouettes. So I think you're going to get a very different perspective from all of us, more of an NFL perspective. I mean, Russ was a scout in the league for a long time. So with us, you're getting guys that have actually been trained the NFL way. So I think we have a unique perspective that's worth listening to.
Yep. And also, if they follow you on Twitter, you do a mock draft with Brian Perez every couple of
yes.
days. And that always sparks some interest. I see a lot of people getting fired
just
up.
Just flames, my mentions, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the important thing to remember with that, when we do those, we're doing them based on our boards. We're not trying to predict a draft, which is a crazy exercise in and of itself. No one can predict a draft.
No, you're just not doing what you would like to see happen.
Yes. Yeah. So cool. So every pick I'm making is what I would do if I was that general manager. Hmm. So and there was one last year. I did one at the end of last year that I need to pull out because I had things like I had Beckham going like third or fourth overall. I had Breland going top 10, and people were just going nuts on me. Well, when you look at it after the fact, those guys turned out to be pretty good players. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the value in it is understanding how other people value. I mean, quite frankly, if everyone had the same opinion and the draft were cut and dry, there would be no draft industry.
No, and that's exactly what Dane Brugler said to us during the week, was that it's so fun that, you know, the same two eyes don't see the same player the same way. And that's what's so fun about the scouting process and what generates talk and chatter. And it's great for Twitter because it's just, you know, you can speak for hours about a player and so many people will just come in with so many different opinions on them.
Oh, sure. And the thing is, everybody is going to have hits. Everybody is going to have misses. That's if sad. Anybody ever tells you they haven't missed on a guy, then you really shouldn't be talking about the NFL draft because everybody misses.
Absolutely. That's right. Thanks for joining us, Josh, and enjoy the draft.
All right. Thanks, guys. Had a blast.
Thanks, man. Bye.
Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
All right, let's get ready to rumble. First contestant is Justin Twell. He's phoned in from Brisbane, Queensland. He's from England. He also likes shopping occasionally with his children and the Chicago Bears. Welcome, Justin.
Hi, boys. Thanks for the introduction. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're the first person to run the gauntlet. You're about to do the rumble. Basically, how it works is me and Josh both are born on the 8th day of... I'm August. You're
the 8th of the 8th. I'm the 8th of the 10th.
So there's 8 questions because that's our lucky number. So that's the official number of the podcast. So we're going to give you 8 questions.
Do we have an official
number of the podcast now, along with official player Blaine Gabbert, and we're still waiting on a team. So you've got to get 6 questions right out of 8 to win Root and White t-shirt, right?
Awesome, sounds good.
And some other random knickknacks that we bought from NFL.com, but they're a surprise. That's like a little gift basket. All right, so basically, the timer is 2 rounds of Jeopardy music. So we're about to start that. So the minute that starts, I'll start the first question, and Josh Woot will yell stop when that music expires because you can't hear it. So that way you've got clear mind.
Yeah.
You can say pass and then skip to the next one, and we can go back to it. All right.
Okay.
You ready?
Yep.
What team did the 1985 Bears defeat in Super Bowl XX in 1985?
The New England Patriots.
Correct. Who did the Chicago Bears select in the first round of the 2014 NFL Draft?
Kyle Fuller.
Correct. Who is the official mascot of the Chicago Bears?
Staley Bear.
Oh my God, you're on fire!
On fire!
What number did Walter Payton wear?
At number 34.
Oh my God, he's on fire! Who was the quarterback for the Bears in the 1985 championship team?
That was Jim McMahon.
Oh my God, he needs one more! Which member of the Bears' secondary had an interception in Super Bowl XLI, Charles Tillman, Daniel Manning, or Chris Harris?
Oh, I think that was Daniel Manning.
Oh. All right, we'll move on. Who was the Bears' starting quarterback during the 1990 season?
Sorry, back to that again?
Who was the Bears' starting quarterback during the 1990 season?
Stop!
1990. Eric Kramer.
Oh, no! He fell short. We gave you a little extra time because I did, you didn't hear me properly on question 7. Chris Harris was the guy that had the interception. And the starting quarterback during the 1990 season was Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, wow. It's funny you say that because I started to be a Bears fan in 1989. And I do vaguely, I was like 11 years old at the time.
Yeah.
I know that the Bears drafted Harbaugh. I think, actually, come to think of it, I think Kramer was after him now.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it, Eric Kramer was around 93 or 4 or something like that. So
just started off so good. 5 in a row, just smashing it. The last question we're going to ask was, what year was Brian Urlacher drafted in?
That was 2000.
Yeah. Oh, you would have got it. Oh, man. Oh, damn. You got 5. That's pretty good.
That's very
good. But nice. Not enough for a prize pack.
Hold on. Urlacher was 2000, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said, 2000.
Yeah, I know, but you ran out of time, so, you know.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Fair enough. No, it's all good fun.
To win the game, you have to actually abide by the rules.
No way.
That's right.
Rules are made to be broken, aren't they?
Yes, well, that's true. Just ask Bill Belichick. thanks for coming on, Justin. Before we go, excited for the Bears' upcoming season?
Yeah, for sure, mate. Look, I think last year was just, well, it was just awful. And I really like the coaching moves we've done. You know, we've had a good clear out. I like some of the free agent signings. Nothing too big or flashy, but most of them fill a good need. I think if we can have a good draft coming up, we can start to get back on the right track. So I'm pretty excited. It's looking. Look, I'm not saying we're going to make the playoffs, but we can start rebuilding again and get back to. To being competitive in a few years' time. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited for the next couple of years as well.
Who's your first-round prediction for the Bears?
Oh, well, I had Amari Cooper. I just feel that that's the way they're going to go. Obviously, we lost Marshall. And bringing in Eddie Royal was good. I quite like the move.
Pretty big money for Eddie Royal.
I think they'll just go with Cooper. I think he'll be sitting there, and they just won't be able to pass up. But if it was my choice, I really hope they get Beasley. If it was down to me,
There you go.
Yeah.
We just had Josh Liskowitz on, and Beasley's the number one player on his draft board, so he's high.
I really like him. I really hope the Bears get him. But I just feel like Cooper's going to be sitting there. And they're going to go grab him because they made a lot of defensive signings in free agency. So, I think they'll go Cooper first round and then probably go to defense again second round.
Mm.
Yeah, that's Marshall's big shoes to fill.
It is.
Both literally and Yeah.
You know, whatever the opposite of literally is. Or a bit.
Unliterally or whatever you want to say. No, for yeah. sure, mate. Look, it's big shoes to fill, but look, we've got Jeffrey on the other side, and he's proven he can be a number one guy, which is really good. So, yeah, I think Cooper, but yeah, we'll see.
See how we go. Perfect.
Well, thanks for being the first ever contestant on the Rumble.
No worries, mate. It's all good. Good fun.
Yeah, you are. Oh, yeah. You got five in a row. I was getting excited.
I was about to say, is our first ever contestant just going to...
Just rock through it. I was like, we're going to have to reevaluate this competition because if it's too easy for people to win, we don't want to do it.
We're going
to
be quite heavily out of pocket.
Yeah.
Look, I couldn't believe I didn't get the interception one in the Super Bowl. Look, I was living in the UK at the time. I set up, I think it kicked off at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I always remember sitting up watching that game.
Who won that game, by the way?
And I really, I think the Colts won it.
I think I asked you this last time you were on. It's fun. It doesn't go ill.
No, look, I remember the Bears had a really good start. I think we was up like 14-6 yeah. at one point
Devin,
or whatever.
Devin Hester returned and then they just, for a touchdown.
They just kind of folded and, but yeah, there we go. No, I should have had that one. For some reason, Daniel Manning was in my head and I thought, yeah, it was him, it was definitely him, but no, I see now that you mention it.
Yeah, Chris Harris. You have to have a Manning in your head. That's fine. That's a normal problem.
Yeah, exactly. no, it's good fun, boys. It's, and yeah, hopefully I'll definitely be listening to the other contestants as well. It'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, so we're putting the call out there. If you consider yourself an expert on a player, a team, a topic, NFL-related, please tweet us at Woot & White or email wootandwhite@gmail.com.
Well, it'd be interesting if they if someone just, you know, comes on and says, you know, like an unknown player kind of thing, and they know everything.
Oh, yeah. It'll help expert on Pierre Desir.
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
That would be really
That'd be cool. So, yeah, we'll open that up. We won't have it on every week, but, you know, as we start to get people interested in playing, then it'll be on every now and then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Justin, and have a good one.
Nice chatting.
Yeah, you too, guys. Thanks a lot.
Oh, so Justin was nearly there. We're kind of a little bit relieved. Shipping costs for NFL is crazy. It is absolutely crazy. We just spoke to Justin off air about how he got the Staley DeBear question right, and we were saying that we couldn't think of the Colts' mascot name, and you couldn't think of the Phillies' mascot name, so he did well. Exceptionally well. All I know about the Colts mascot is he likes to attack people. He has an anger issue, and I'm thankful for it.
You're thankful for it?
Yes, that's right.
I just typed in Colts mascot on Google. It comes up Colts mascot tackles kid.
Yeah, I just said that. He did really well. So, bit of Bears stuff. So, yeah, if you consider yourself an expert, please let us know, and we can have you on the show via telephone.
His name is Blue.
Blue! Big Blue! You're my boy, Blue! That's right, that's right. If you search him on Vine, there's some really... it'll be worth your while. It'll be worth your while. Alright, so...
Eagles is Swoop. Swoop the Eagle.
Swoop, nah, that's cool. So we've got Blue.
They're cool names too. Good job.
It's better than Staley the Bear. Yeah. Alright.
Tell me what's your flavour. What's your flavor? Tell me what's your flavor.
What's your flavor?
Tell me what's your flavor.
All right, it's time for What's Your Flavor. We've got Matt Bungard on the line. He is on Twitter at @TheMattBungard, and he's got a lot of interest. He makes lists about food and generic items. He's
the only Matt Bungard you need to know.
Yeah.
That is accurate. There's one from Akron, Ohio. You don't need to know him.
Wait, from Akron, like LeBron territory?
I think so, yeah. Like, if you search my name on Google, which I've obviously done, who hasn't done that? Like, aside from me, this is some Matthew Bungard in, like, Akron, Ohio.
If LeBron is friends with this Matt Bungard, then...
If this guy is friends with LeBron, he's probably the Matt Bungard you need to know.
Right? Yeah, that's true. But for now, we're going to go with you. And so every now and then we're going to have you on the show to discuss, because we've had a few debates on the show about ice cream, Tiny Teddies, cheese was popular last week. I copped a lot of hate for that.
Can I just say, I'm leading with my taste. My taste buds apparently are superior to
yours. But I'm not a guy that is I'm very open about that. I have this mainstream taste. I like who I am. I like it. I go about my business my own way. All right, so today with What's Your Flavor, and thanks to Craig David for opening that segment.
He consented to...
No copywriting issues whatsoever. Pizza. We're talking pizza. Toppings, types. There was a bit of conjecture over that. Matt, I got a little bit anal
about
that.
It's fine. We're good. I just didn't want to confuse people.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, so we're going to go with each of us are going to go through our top five, and then we're going to discuss maybe probably the worst pizza we've had, or maybe...
Which is going to be very controversial, I can tell you that right now.
Okay, let's start with the number one pizza.
Are we going from one to five or five to one?
Let's go from five to one.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Get a bit of a drum roll going. Okay, for me, my number five is a simple one. Some call it an entree. I call it delicious. Garlic cheese pizza. It's simple and it's beautiful.
You like that? Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of that, especially like if you get the choice between that and garlic bread, you always take the garlic pizza.
Yeah, that's true.
Always.
That's true.
If you don't, you're probably not eating with me because you're not my friend.
No.
Number five for me is Supreme. It always seems to be that pizza that once everyone's cleaned out the other ones, it's always Supreme sitting around still. And yeah. I'm happy with that.
I'll
happily go clean the rest of the boxes.
Yeah.
My number five is also Supreme. Not that it's particularly good, but it is inoffensive. You can't lose by buying Supreme pizza at a pizza place. No one's going to complain that you bought Supreme. No one's going to whinge, and everyone will eat it. Whether or not they enjoy it particularly much, well, that's... remains to be seen, but they're not going to hate it.
I mean, they can always pick things off.
Yeah, the olives are easy to pick off.
Who
doesn't pick the
if
olives?
If you don't like cheese, though, you're just in trouble.
Hey,
if you don't like cheese, you probably can't have
this is a previous
the pizzas
episode,
we're going to run through.
And for me, I'm just going to clarify this. For cheese, it's the texture of it in its natural state.
Can we not say
like
natural state? It doesn't
we don't
to
need to go through
thing.
This.
Okay, fine. That's all right. Number four for me is similar to garlic cheese pizza in that it's simple and I like it. Margarita? Yep.
My number four is the Philly steak pizza from Crust. I'm a big fan of that. It's not just because I'm a Philly fan. I fell in love with Philly steak when I was over in America, but yeah, Philly steak pizza is terrific.
Mm. That's cool.
Well, I am not a Philly fan, and Philly cheesesteaks are delicious, so you don't have to explain any supposed biases there. My number four is barbecue chicken.
I mentioned this off-air. I said barbecue chicken is a good pizza.
Now, it's very important when you get a barbecue chicken pizza, you have to get barbecue sauce on the base, not tomato sauce, or the whole thing is ruined.
Why would anyone, and I mean anyone... order barbecue chicken with tomato sauce on it. If you are...
that's the two options of, like, a base when you order pizza from anywhere. You can get a tomato base or a barbecue sauce base.
I don't understand why anyone would.
You're not a true barbecue...
Well, look, I'm saying the option is there.
Yeah,
Do not exercise the option.
No, we're agreeing with you. We're just saying that...
I know. I don't know who would. I'm just saying it is an option when you buy pizza, so...
Yeah.
So take the default barbecue option while getting barbecue chicken pizza.
Correct.
Yes.
All right, well, we just talked about barbecue, and I'm just going to switch the meats around. Barbecue Meat Lovers is my number three pizza.
We're in consensus there.
Oh, high five.
Barbecue Meat Lovers...
Yeah, number three.
My number three is Hawaiian.
Ooh.
Oh, I was waiting to see if this would be met with any resistance from the anti-pineapple communists out there.
I love pineapple.
Can I just say,
pineapple is delicious, and it belongs on a pizza.
It does.
Everyone likes Hawaiian except the people that are dead inside.
Can I just say, there's no debate from why on myself, because I'm going to skip ahead here, and my number two was... I've gone really specific. I love wood-fired Italian Hawaiian pizza.
That's cool.
It's so good.
That's cool. Yeah, I was contemplating putting Hawaiian on my list as well.
But I'm certain that you'll have listeners that think Hawaiian pizza is an abomination, and those people are wrong.
Pineapple can go on a burger and on pizza. That's fine.
I agree. It should.
And same with beetroot. That should go on a burger.
Let's slow that down.
Wait, what? You don't like beetroot?
It doesn't add anything. It doesn't
what
taste
do you mean?
Like anything. It just gets in the way. It's just purple. It stains your clothes. It's gross.
I think it tastes delicious. But then I can.
This is an argument for another time.
Absolutely. And why should you discriminate beetroot because you can't handle the mess? That's not all beetroot.
Is not a pizza topping. We will argue about this in the future.
It actually is in some pizzas. But anyway, let's move on.
Jesus Christ, who puts beetroot on a
pizza? I don't. Yeah.
Right. Anyway,
my number two is pepperoni. I love it. It's the best. Especially in America, pepperoni pizza is delicious. For the win. Yep, and you already told us Woodfire Italian, so Matthew...
Right, well, my number two is Meat Lovers, so we all had it up there, so I need to explain it, because you guys already did.
Yep.
Just so much meat.
Yeah.
So good.
Oh, Meat Lovers, what's there to hate?
Nothing.
Unless you're a vegetarian.
Well, that's not the kind of person you want listening to the Weird and White podcast anyway.
However, shout out to our three vegetarian listeners.
Welcome back.
Should we do our worst one before we do our number one?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I agree.
That's a good. Actually,
this, okay.
You got this handled out.
All right, go Y.
All right, for me, anything with pumpkin on a pizza, get the out of here. Just go. Take it, go.
I'm not a big fan of pumpkin in general.
In general, not me neither.
Mine is when they try to go... This is more... Not the, you know, commercial Domino's or Pizza Hut, but when you go out and you say, oh, let's try something fancy, and you get it, and there's just, you know, yogurt.
Like a liter of it.
Yeah, just slather across the top and think, oh, yes, we're really fancy. Or another thing that really peeves me off is when they think, oh, here, we've designed this really nice pizza, and we're going to try to make it look nicer by putting a handful of rocket leaves on the top.
Oh, my God.
And you just literally pick it up and put it on the
it's
plate.
It's like you found it in the garden out the front. You're like, oh, let's just put that on top.
Yeah, now it looks healthier and more
and yogurt,
nutritious. Yeah.
Yogurt is a dessert. I'm sorry. It doesn't go on any main meal.
And
ever.
It shouldn't be warm.
No.
Yogurt okay. should never be warm.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, sorry. We really hate things.
I agree with everything both of you said. The only reason my answer doesn't follow one of yours is that, I mean, they're not exactly particularly common pizza toppings.
No.
Pumpkin and rocket and yogurt.
Yogurt.
So I've gone with a very controversial choice, one that's sure to make some people angry.
Ruffle some feathers.
It probably will, but pepperoni is awful.
What? What?
Why second ranked?
It's just like damp cardboard. If you want to have something similar that tastes a million times better, put sausage on your pizza.
Italian sausage?
Yes.
Yes.
No,
yeah, okay, I'm going to kind of side with Matt a little bit here. But
Look, I like Italian sausage as well.
I like the flavour of pepperoni. However, you know when you get a slice of pepperoni and then it comes to, you've got to take your next mouthful or bite. And half of the pepperoni is in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, see, no,
half...
but that's...
Yes, because it's so hard to chew.
You can't just bite through it easily.
But if
you have to drag off the pizza.
Yeah, the good pizza places will cut it up into nice bits. Like, they actually have it proper. I don't like when they put, like, a whole big, like, I don't know, dinner plate-sized pepperoni on it. Just one piece of pizza. It needs to be cut up. I'm sorry, but I agree with that. But it's not the worst.
And did you know... Okay, this is according to Maddox.
We're about to learn here.
Okay.
And it's true, because I've double-checked this. Pepperoni is a made-up American thing. If you ask for pepperoni in Italy,
it's
they
salami?
Will think you're asking for peppers.
Ooh.
As in capsicums.
Well, we're lucky that this game isn't pizzas we're eating in Italy.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, who would ever want to eat pizza in Italy, right, Josh?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
That's crazy.
Shout out to our two Italian listeners from Italy.
Who are also vegetarian. Yes. So that doesn't matter.
I don't think you would survive in Italy if you were a vegetarian.
So we have three vegetarian listeners and two of them are from Italy.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so pepperoni is your word. That...
It is. That's fine. I'm happy to argue with anyone on this. If you can find any benefits of pepperoni that aren't more accentuated through sausage or salami, then I'll be happy to listen to you.
Wow, this is a...
But you don't ask for a... Like, if I could choose, I'll have an Italian sausage pizza, then that would make more sense. But, like, that's not an offer here.
But that's my point. Yeah, well, that's exactly my point. I already told you, like, pumpkin and rocket and stuff is worse, but those aren't, like, common pizza toppings.
No, exactly. Exactly.
All right.
Like, if I had to choose between a pumpkin and rocket pizza and a pepperoni pizza, I would eat the pepperoni one. But
pumpkin and rocket pizza.
Yeah, exactly. Like, come on.
Okay.
Can we patent that pumpkin and rocket pizza?
I like that.
I don't.
I don't know.
That should be served to the loser of the Wootenai Fantasy League. We should send them a pumpkin.
In the mail, if they're from Melbourne.
And they have to eat it.
It's 4 days old.
Post photos of Okay.
All right, we're getting ridiculous. All right, number one.
Which is so funny. Don't you think it's so funny? Just last week, just talking off air about our favourite pizza, and then...
We're all the same.
Calling Matt up and him agreeing with us.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to let Matt announce our... We're all got the same here. Our favourite pizza is...
The majority of your listener base is Australian, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's good, because they can feel free to stop in at their nearest crust pizza establishment and purchase a Peri Peri Chicken pizza, because that is the best pizza you can get at a takeaway pizza shop in Australia, or I'm happy to say, anywhere.
Wow.
Hey, Golden Pony Boy.
It's the best.
It's amazing.
The sauce, the chicken, the capsicum, the onion. It's caramelized onion.
Caramelized onion.
There are crusts in every state and one in Darwin, so there are no excuses for anyone in Australia to not sample this delicious.
Yeah. Yep.
Delicious creation.
Even Alice Springs, it's worth the drive up to Darwin. Honestly, it is.
It'll cost you a bit in fuel.
Yeah, but it's worth
but
it.
But it's worth it.
It's absolutely 100% worth it.
It is great.
And, you know, we did not orchestrate this. We wrote the list. We prepared our list separately. We rocked up. We've called Matt. He's just gotten out of bed. I don't know why you're getting out of bed at 12, you know.
Because I work nights, champ.
Oh, okay, that's all right. Thanks, buddy. Well, thanks for clarifying that. So
it's all right, you know that, but that's fine.
Yeah, no, I just wanted you to...
We talk about it with you every week.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. So, so it's not orchestrated. So Peri Peri Chicken is the number one pizza flavor in the world.
In the world. I think that's fair. We can also say to the American listeners, you can fly down here. It is worth the trip.
Yeah.
It's worth the trip.
Honestly, it is. It is absolutely worth it. All right, that's it for What's Your Flavor for this week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Matt, any suggestions on our next rendezvous for What's Your Flavor? Any lists you prefer to talk about?
Well, a lot of my lists are very specific to Australia.
That's fine.
Is that fine?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, well, what can we do next time? I don't know. Leave it with me. I'll come up with something.
All right.
We'll post it.
Don't put me on the spot like that.
Yeah. I just thought you might have been, you know... I'm just testing to see how awake you are, but, you know, that's fair. Night shift.
We could... Well, if you... Yeah, I mean, we could do soft drinks or something, maybe.
Ooh. We can eat... Well, do you know what goes well with pizza?
Exactly. And I could be... Yeah. Soft drink sounds good. We can do that.
Soft drink and beer. Well, I know.
Two different. Stop it! Don't start complicating things. All right?
I was saying beer.
Yeah, that's a beer's
good, but I know Matt's on a campaign against craft beers at the moment.
Ooh. I am. That is true.
Can I just say this, right? I'm not saying, right. I liked craft beers before it was cool, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But however, I used to enjoy the occasional craft beer, especially like with my dad on a Sunday or things like that.
Yeah,
and now,
it's
just become so ridiculously annoying that every bar you go to, they're saying, hi, can I have, you know, some other thing in a different language because it looks cool.
It's craft.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so silly. Like, this is the point I was trying to make with Edwin, who you know why, that we were arguing with the other day. He thinks the difference between cheap beer and expensive craft beer is bigger than the difference between, like, cheap spirits and expensive spirits.
Yeah, no, that's wrong.
Yeah, thank you. That is insane.
Because if you get, like, a...
cheap bourbon and cheap vodka is like drinking petrol.
Yeah,
like,
it is. Because if you get Patron and then you get,
you
like,
can just... I would happily drink, like, Super Dries or whatever. Yeah. And they're cheap beer, for lack of a better term.
Man, I drink Reshes sometimes, so, like, whatever.
Yeah, it's fine.
That's it. Yeah.
That's about as fancy as I would get, but yes.
Yeah, whereas, like, you know, if you get Patron vodka and then get, like, I don't know, what's a Hauser brand of vodka, like Ice 44 or Sub-Zero?
At our live draft for baseball, because I wanted to get the cheapest, most disgusting one, because you have to do a shot if you screw up. Oh. I got Red Square vodka from Dan Murphy's, a litre for $40.
Wow, I went to...
A litre.
And it tasted exactly... as good as I expected it would.
Like nail polish remover.
It's funny you mention that. I was at Red Square at Wollongong on last Saturday night. And
do you think that's the Red Square it's named after?
Okay, I don't know, but they had Red Square vodka. So all throughout their establishment. And instead of a live plasma TV, they had like a giant, like Stalin, like one of those, I don't know, whatever the logos is, I don't know. My friend thought it was the Nazi symbol, but it was the...
Wow.
So misinformed. And it was weird. It was... And the vodka was horrible.
How much of that liter did you drink, Matt?
I had 7 shots, and it was not good.
Wow. Okay.
Five of which occurred in a 10-minute window, so... Whatever people were listening to this for NFL information... Like, non-Australian NFL listeners are just, like, completely and utterly lost at what is happening right now.
Yeah, good point. We might have
to. That's fine.
All right, I'm going to put my Justin Tucker jersey on and go to the gym. Goodbye.
See you later. Ciao.
What's your flavor? Tell me what's your flavor. What's your flavor? Tell me what's your flavor.
That's what's your flavor? That was a success. Pepperoni. Wow. Okay.
Pepperoni.
What was supposed to be a 5-minute segment went for about 20. So yeah. We might have to tone that down next time.
It knocked my big dog hat off.
Yes, and speaking of big dog hats, thanks to Big Dog Australia, they finally, not finally, but they finally arrived. Had some shipping issues. So they were busy launching their new website. So I'm going to take my Colts hat off here, and I'm going to slide on my big dog trucker cap.
This fit perfectly.
Oh my God, this feels good. I haven't worn a trucker cap in years. So thanks to Big Dog. Please check out their website, Big Dog Australia. They've got a lot of people wearing Big Dog hats. Gus Wallen from Triple M Grill Team. Chris Gayle. A lot of Australian cricketers. And, get behind it. Get behind us.
Get behind the big dog.
That's our 2 episodes for this week. We really appreciate Josh Liskowitz coming on. Justin 12 for the Rumble. And Matt Bungard for What's Your Flavor. Please check us out on Twitter at WootNY. And also... follow me at JYNFL and Woot on
Josh Woot.
Josh Woot.
Stop taking selfies with me, big dog hat. And our exclusive recording studio. Ciao.